Hello, this is Chris Barter, otherwise known as Professor Laserbooks from Flip the Table, with a public service announcement. If you're considering a roll-and-move mechanic for your new board game, stop it now, or I will come to your house and hit you in the eyes with lasers until you stop, or until you're blind. You're listening to Building the Game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. My name is Rob, and with me as always is Jason.
What's up, Rob?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing excellent.
I have a surprise for you.
You have a surprise
for
me?
I have a big surprise. You ready?
I'm ready.
You better be ready, because it's huge. It's massive. We have guests on the show today.
I had no idea.
Yes, we do. We have Chris, Jared, and Flip from Flip the Table. Hi, guys.
Hey!
Hey! Surprise!
How are you?
It's like it's my birthday.
What an awful birthday. What did you do to your friends?
I know, it took a while to cram all three of us in this cake, for crying out loud.
Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us, guys. We're so happy to have you.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. We're fans of the show, and it's good to have a podcast mashup to take two things that are good things and put them in the same thing, kind of like Doctor Who on the Enterprise or... the lady from Murder, She Wrote on America's Funniest Videos or something.
Yeah,
it's going to be amazing.
Just like that. Exactly. That's what I was thinking.
I think that's the new tagline for both of our shows.
So we typically start the show here talking about what we've been playing lately. And I think maybe our listeners will be interested in hearing from you guys. What have you been playing lately?
Yeah, that's a good question, because we always talk about the games we don't like on our show.
Yeah.
And for those who are not familiar, we do a podcast about terrible board games, and we find the worst and craziest board games, and we play them and dissect them and try to talk about how they could be better, but mostly beat up on them. So we don't get to talk a lot about games we like. I can tell you that I'm a huge fan of Dominion, and I just got Dominion Dark Ages, and I have to disagree with a lot of the criticism out there. I think it's a good set. Maybe not as good as like a Seaside, but certainly not as bad as people are saying. I really enjoy some of the different stuff that can be done, and I can see the potential for this set to really integrate well with the other sets. I can't wait to take it for another spin.
Cool. Now, let me ask you about that, because I'm still new to Dominion myself. I only just discovered this past summer, and my wife and I bought it at Gen Con this year. And so I've only played the base set, and I don't know, there are so many additions for that, like Seaside and Dark Ages.
Mm-hmm.
Do you combine those with the original set, or are they each standalone games?
Yes. Intrigue and the base set are the only ones that can be played standalone. If you have Intrigue and base, then that blows it up so you can play with six players as well. So if I were to recommend an order of operations, I would say Intrigue, base, Seaside, Prosperity, and then take a look at the others. But that's my opinion.
Okay. Well, right on. I mean, we love Dominion. We played it this past summer, and we played it once and instantly fell in love with it, and then it killed us because we had to then wait from July to August for Gen Con to actually go pick it up. And I think the past week we've played it four times.
Yeah, it's such an awesome game, and I would basically buy anything with Dominion on it. Like, they would have to release, like, a box of dead ants for me not to buy it.
You'd still buy it.
You'd buy it.
That's true.
As long as
it'd be a limited edition, so...
Right.
So, Jared, what you playing?
Pog.
Get him out.
For real? What?
Seriously, my mom last night called me and she was like, "Hey, I still have some of your stuff from when you moved out like 10 years ago." And I was like, "Oh, cool. You know, I'll come by and pick it up." And it was my old Pog collection. So my wife and I, we were pumped to play this terrible, terrible game.
So you guys actually broke it out?
Oh, yeah. We played it right before I showed up here.
Nice.
It was amazing.
Do you have any, like, special Pogs? Any, like...
I don't have any Slammers. I only have, like, you know, just the little chintzy ones. But I guess I had a ton of the Mighty Morphin Power Ranger ones from, like, McDonald's.
Wow.
Yeah. Totally old school.
I have one memory of Pogs. I've never played it before. But I used to work at this convenience store. I was in high school. And we had to do inventory. And I was the unlucky schmuck who had to count the bin of Pogs. There was 728 of them, and I will always remember that number. Because it took a long time.
Was that a punishment or something?
You know, hold on to this, because I think there's a game in there. Oh, it's 728 Pogs. It's a worker placement game. We'll save that for later.
Yeah, that's for later in the show.
Let's save that.
Wow.
How about you, Flip? What are you playing?
Well, I've been playing some Le Havre. My wife and I really love that game, actually. It's one of my favorites. I managed to get my hands on Eclipse actually this past weekend and give that a try out. And I really enjoyed it. Pretty meaty. It was a learning game, so it kind of went slow and clunky, but I definitely see what the allure is there. And as far as right today, we played Pass the Bomb, which is a game I picked up at Goodwill, and it's actually kind of cool.
Huh. Is that? Roll a die and pass a bomb around?
Yeah, it's a word game. It has a deck of cards with like just like three letters or two letters, like OY or CHI. And then you roll the die and you either use that segment in a word, like at the beginning, in the middle, or the end. And you have this little plastic bomb that ticks and you hold it in your hand and you try to come up with a word. As soon as you come up with a word, you pass it. And of course, it explodes eventually. And it's just this silly little game, but it's definitely a lot of fun.
It explodes?
And it explodes.
So you can play it once.
You play it once and then go to the
real
hospital.
Real men play it twice.
Wow. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I was at Goodwill, and I'm standing there looking at the games, and I saw this little kid walking around with it in his hands, and I'm like, oh, man, I've heard about that. I want that game.
And I
stood there and waited for him to put it down and swooped in and snatched it up.
Were you in clown makeup while standing behind him?
Of course.
I was thinking the same thing.
Of course.
For those who don't know, Flip is actually a legit, real, professional clown. That's not a joke. I'm not like making stuff up.
I'm recording this on stilts right now.
I always picture you in the makeup, Flip.
Yeah.
Because of the Twitter picture, I always just assume when you record the podcast, you're in the makeup.
Yeah, it's a real pain to edit out all the horn honk noises. And...
That's awesome. That is awesome. Now, and the other two, you said Le Havre? Le Havre?
Yeah. Le Havre, Le Havre, Le Havre, whatever you want to call it. That and Troyes or Trois, whatever. Okay. I can't remember the proper pronunciation of that.
I call it
Troyes.
I've heard it called Trois or whatever, but. And then I tried to find it on BGG to link in our show notes because Chris Kirkman actually talked about how much he liked the game.
Right.
And that was like impossible because I couldn't figure out how to spell it.
Oh, it's a great game. And the funny thing is, it's a total Euro, but it uses tons and tons of dice in it as the playing pieces, which is kind of ironic because you think of Euros not having dice or just, you know, turning their nose up at it. But it's a great game. It's coming out with an expansion too soon that my wife and I are just like chomping at the bit for.
Right on.
Yeah. So if you're looking to spell it, to look it up on BGG, that's Trois, M-O-N-O-P-O-L-Y, Trois.
Sadly, it took me a minute to realize what you were actually spelling. So he's just saying letters. Oh, wait a minute.
Cool. And so those are like worker placement games, are they?
Trois is basically a worker placement. You roll a dice and the dice are your workers. The dice are how your workers perform. You have little workers that you can place around the board, but you roll a handful of dice and you can buy dice from your opponents. They can steal them from you. And there's usually a zombie player or like a third player. You can buy and steal dice from them as well. It's really, really a lot of fun. I would recommend it to anybody. If they're slightly interested in Euros, I would definitely check it out. And Le Havre is just basically shipping. You're getting goods and you're trying to build a town so you can change these goods into money. You're building a machine basically, and it's a lot of fun.
Right on. That sounds great.
There's a lot going on in Le Havre. It's basically, if you played Puerto Rico, it was inspired by Puerto Rico actually.
Oh, okay.
Puerto Rico is one of those games that everyone has said, because you like Catan, you should play Puerto Rico.
And
I just never did.
Yeah.
But I really want to.
It's like, if you like cheeseburgers, you should try this cheeseburger.
Yeah, I want to get Star Trek Catan so bad.
Oh, they had it at Gen Con. If you've been at Gen Con, Uhura could have signed it for you.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, I guess we're just gonna have to settle for the person at the Target signing it for us.
Could you just sign this, Nichelle Nichols?
You're right.
I guess that if you're gonna be at somewhere and fake the signature, probably go for Shatner and Nimoy.
Just, right, that's true.
Not that I'm trying to downplay Nichelle Nichols. I'm just saying.
And Orson Welles, while we're at it.
True. How did you get Orson Welles to sign your Star Trek Catan? Science, that's how.
Well, he was Unicron, right? So he fits. Yes. Outer space.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's close enough for me.
Justification.
Right.
That's what we're good at here on the Building the Game podcast. Justification of things that don't make sense.
Cool. And Jared, did you have anything else, or was it just Pogs?
Yeah, really.
No, beyond that, I mean, my wife and I, we play a lot of Blood Bowl Team Manager.
Mm.
We love that game. And even though I usually get smoked in it every time, I'm still willing to go and try and win with those humans.
You should hang out with Rob, because Rob always loses to his wife, too.
My wife beats my butt every game we play every time.
Same here. I mean, we keep tallies inside of our game boxes, like little check marks. Oh. And my wife thrashes me all the time.
Is that actually in case you guys like ever need to have a fight? But I've beat you 27 times at Pugs. Well, so. Actually,
I must admit, I think the only game that I've managed, it's pretty cool because Le Havre, I think, is the only game I've managed to beat her consistently at. But everything else, it's just... Yeah.
She wants to play every other game ever made, and you're like, let's play Le Havre.
Exactly.
I'm not going to give my wife the satisfaction of talking about my win-loss record. Let's just say we stopped keeping track of our Scrabble scores. We actually have a Monopoly championship at home. Oh. Because Monopoly is, I'm a Monopoly defender through and through, and I don't care what anybody says. I don't think it's nearly as bad as the worst games out there. So once every maybe 3 to 6 months, we will play a game of Monopoly, and we have a plaque on our mantle. I'll send you pictures of this for proof, which shows who won the last game. So right now, I'm the reigning champion, but she held on to it for like a year and a half before that. So, so it's all about finding excuses not to play, so I can just stay on the mantle longer.
Well, you know, it's funny. I used to rag on Monopoly more because, you know, I hadn't played it since I was a little kid, and I just, you know, I had zero interest in it. But I just recently watched that documentary, Under the Boardwalk, The Monopoly
That's
Story.
That's a great movie. Great movie.
Fantastic. Yeah, I just totally caught me off guard, and I think I've really been given Monopoly an unfair shake there, and I need to give it another chance.
So you watch some Monopoly propaganda.
Well,
and
yeah.
Now you think it's all good.
Yeah.
Or Monopaganda, if you will.
we got Doctor Who Monopoly coming out soon, too.
Whoa. Yeah, 50th anniversary edition.
Yeah.
Also known as the money vacuum from my house.
That's the best thing about Monopoly as a market, is it's such an easy thing to reskin with everything ever. Yeah. So, you know, there's like a Monopoly for, I think every state college has its own Monopoly. Every state has its own Monopoly.
Yeah.
Every TV show ever made, even if it only went to pilot, has its own Monopoly.
We have 60 Minutes Monopoly.
Yeah.
I think a Law and Order Monopoly where it could make their doom doom sound. That would be,
pretty cool.
Great.
They just have an electronic device that just does that, right. And that would make it worth buying.
Well, actually, would that be like a sign for a game designer's fame? Like, as soon as they reskin your game, that means you've made it. Because Catan's getting reskinned. I mean, you think Klaus Tuber would be like, all right, I'm done here.
Catan, but, you know, was, you could... drop the mic, I'm out.
Catan was actually reskinned years ago by the Bible. So, true story. The Settlers of Canaan. So
actually, you know what? One of my holy grail games is the Rockman edition, which is Mega Man Catan. It's on BGG. You can look it up.
What?
Yeah, yeah. The resources are like oil and nuts and bolts and stuff, and you're competing against like Gutsman and Iceman and all that stuff.
Oh, and why aren't we playing that right now?
Exactly.
It was like, I think it was only released in Japan, and there's only like 300 copies out there. But
they get all the good stuff in Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, eBay, I need you.
Yeah, and if I was in Goodwill and I saw some kid holding it in his hands, I wouldn't even
bother.
I don't
think
he would
wait. Yeah.
I'd roll that kid.
Just slap it out of his hands. Bamps, you lose.
Oh, Jared's looking it up right now.
Yeah.
Excellent.
That's great. Well, hey, moving on, I think our next segment is Mechanic of the Week. And you guys kind of have to slog through some pretty awful stuff in your show. So we were hoping you might share with us some of your most hated and most loved, or maybe just most hated. You know, that's usually funnier to talk about. So what do you
think? I'd agree with that, actually. Yeah, because we took it upon ourselves to just find the worst or weirdest board games out there and play them and just see what the deal is. It's a real curiosity. I think you see them sitting on the shelf and you know it's not going to be great, but you just got to know. And so so we have 10 episodes out. We have 3 more already recorded. So we've had a chance to play a lot of bad games, and some episodes have multiple games. So we were able to come up with 2 or 3 things that just seem to crop up consistently. So if you're a budding game designer, if you're looking to get published, these are some landmines to look out for. And I think the elephant in the room that we got to talk about first is Roll and Move. Ludology just had a great episode on Roll and Move recently, so I want to give credit to them because they kind of got there first. But Roll and Move is one of the most sort of universally reviled mechanics in amongst board game snobs like us, because there are just so many games out there that use it so sloppily. But I think the real issue with Roll and Move is not the mechanic itself, but the fact that it's so often used to replace decision making in games.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, rolling dice and moving that many spaces, I think Flip had mentioned earlier when we were kind of talking before the show, it's just as random as shuffling cards or, you know, drawing tiles. It's another means of randomization. But what happens is in games like Transformers game, which is the first game we played for the show, it takes empowerment away from the player so that the game is playing itself. Yep, in the Transformers game, what happens is you roll 2 dice and each player is on a square with 6 numbers around it. So depending on the dice you roll, you follow the numbers around the board. And when you're rolling 2 dice, you can make decisions. You can decide which pair of squares you go. So at least you have some control. But you spend 3/4 of the game in your truck form as Optimus Prime, and he only rolls 1 die. So you literally are rolling and moving 1 space that you don't get to pick for most of the game. And it's almost like a really long, slow version of electric football.
In that game, everybody gets to be Optimus Prime. I want to be Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
It might sound good at first, but trust us.
But nobody wants to be Optimus Prime the truck. I mean, because might as well just be a truck driver.
That's true.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying.
Optimus Prime clones are cool, though. I mean, think about that. We could all be clones of Optimus Prime. Of course, that's also the RoboCop problem we had, too. We were all RoboCop.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. That tends to come up in a lot of licensed games, is they don't want to make anybody choose to be the coolest character, so they just make everybody the coolest character.
Yeah. Now, in RoboCop's defense, because, okay, you're talking to a huge Robo fanatic here, okay? I love RoboCop. And in Prime Directives, the TV miniseries, there are multiple RoboCops. So,
Okay.
You know. They had a TV miniseries?
Yeah.
It was I think it's on Netflix, isn't it?
It is. It's a 3-parter. It's good.
Really?
Yeah. Wow, I've been meaning to check that out.
Sorry, guys. I have to leave the podcast right now. I'm going to go watch that.
I don't blame you. I actually want to go watch that. And definitely do not judge the RoboCop series by the RoboCop VCR game. That's a poor approach to take.
I don't know if you guys heard or not, but in Detroit, there's a RoboCop statue being built.
And, yes, I heard.
There was a fundraiser for it, and people gave a ton of money because in Michigan, we don't have a lot to hold on to for Detroit. But one of those things is RoboCop.
Yeah,
that's right.
So, car companies not always doing the best. RoboCop always awesome.
100% of the time.
Right.
So back to Roll and Move.
Speaking of Roll and Move,
you know it's an interesting mechanic because I've thought about Roll and Move before in ways to quote fix it, right? But every way that I can think to fix Roll and Move kind of makes it not Roll and Move. I mean, when you're adding I guess if the Roll and Move mechanic really truly is, I roll a die and I go that many number of spaces. I mean, if it really is Candyland or Chutes and Ladders, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no way to fix that because that's what the mechanic is. right? I mean,
My thought in that case is if roll and move is one of the decisions that you can make throughout the course of a game, then maybe you're getting away then from the lack of empowerment there. Because even if you're just rolling a die and moving in one direction, or if you roll a die and you get to choose which direction you go, so you at least have some sort of can point yourself in some direction. That's better than a lot of these games where you roll a die, you move exactly that many spaces in exactly one direction, and you do what the space tells you to do.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much it's just the game's playing itself, and your hand's just rolling the die.
But you also just described Monopoly.
No, but Monopoly allows you to make decisions. I was just going to actually use Clue as an example, because Clue, you roll and move, but you get to choose the direction you go, the room you go in. I mean, that's one aspect. In Candyland, or right. Chutes and Ladders, when you roll, right. that's all you do. That's right. your, like, Chutes and Ladders. I don't know exactly how you play Candyland. Chutes and Ladders. You roll the die, you count the spaces, and sometimes you got to fall down a chute.
Right.
Well, you could fix it if you change them all into gingerbread men with weapons running around.
Great idea.
Whoa. How come nobody thought of that before?
Yeah, and put a bunch of card weapons in there, like that are all puns of like candy and stuff.
Oh genius.
Puns are always great.
Copyright, we got this.
Have you guys played Shooting Ladders? Have you played that one?
Yeah, I have. I did not
care. That game is brilliant. Oh, well, never mind.
No, I'm talking about Shooting Ladders, not Chutes and Ladders.
No, I'm thinking, what's the other one that...
Run For Your Life, Candyman. You're thinking of?
It seems like there was another one that was that similar concept. Maybe I'm mixing it up.
Well, there's two. There's Run For Your Life Candyman, which is a spoof on Candyland.
Okay.
And then Shootin' Ladders was kind of the sequel to it, where it's a spoof of Chutes and Ladders, and you're all the gingerbread men, and you're...
Okay. It's pretty much Frag meets Chutes and Ladders.
Yes, right. And it's got, you know...
Then it must be Run For Your Life that I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think, in my opinion, don't hate the mechanic, hate the design. Because roll and move, in my opinion, can be implemented well, but we played so many games where it hasn't been. I can understand why it's gotten that reputation. Mm. So it's if you're going to use it, you got to use it the right way and make sure that it isn't playing the game for you, that it's one option that players can use.
Yeah,
that's my take on it.
Yeah, I think that's what we're all kind of saying here, is that you need to have enough other stuff with the game to give you to do, so that's just one small piece of the whole puzzle.
I can get up over that.
Yeah, it's so funny because we were talking earlier, and we were talking about how prevalent roll and move is in most board games today. You know, kids just automatically expect it to be there.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine and I ran like a introductory to role-playing games at our local library. And I brought a Descent set, and I broke it down, and I broke down the characters to just intelligence, strength, and movement points. Mm-hmm. And I just told the kids basically what we're going to do. We're going to play this game. And every time I handed them dice, they would automatically roll it and move their character that many spaces, even though they had a movement allowance. And I'd be like, no, this is how it works. Guy moves five, he moves five. This guy moves three, you know. But it was amazing. It was one of those things you don't even think about. Like us as hardcore gamers, we don't think about that stuff so much. But like those kids, it was just automatic.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for kids games, there's an argument to be made for having less decisions and empowerment because they're just sort of developing and learning about games and taking turns and being a good sport. But my opinion is once you reach eight and up, it's time to give kids some more credit and give them a little bit more to do.
Teaching your eight-year-old Twilight Imperium.
Hey, they have Settlers of Catan Jr. that's rated for 6+.
I actually want to check
that game
out.
Counting down till my kid gets six, which is about 5.5 years from now. But
no, what you need to do is take your kid and teach him Twilight Imperium at like 3 years old and just YouTube it and...
Or you could get the kids edition of BSG.
BSG for kids.
Yeah. Teach them not to trust each other.
You mentioned Twilight Imperium. I'm super, because I mentioned that on the show before, that I totally want to try it, but I'm never going to spend the money on buying it myself, you know. But I talked to a friend the other day who had just picked up a copy of it, and he's totally going to let me know the next time they play, and I am pumped. I cannot wait to try that game.
We have a friend who plays Twilight Imperium anytime he gets a chance, like every con, that's his thing. Yeah. And I'm having a little get together on my birthday at the end of this month, and I'm jumping in and trying out Twilight Imperium for the first time. Are you guys signed up for that or
No. That's too much for me.
It's like,
but yeah, I'm gonna give it a shot.
I think Battlestar Galactica is at like my maximum tolerance. Like I can handle about that length of game, and after that I might start getting a little frustrated and trolling people, and that's dangerous ground. Jared, you had one you wanted to talk about as well, a mechanic to discuss.
True. I remember when we first got together and decided, you know, what were we going to do for reviewing? And when we decided on terrible board games, you know, the first thing that came to all our minds were VHS and DVD games. And you know, that is a mechanic in a lot of those games, is the VHS component or the DVD component. Now, for the most part, they've been terrible. I mean, just awful.
You apologize to Chuck Woolery right now.
Okay. Yeah, hold on. I said mostly. The Chuck Woolery one was probably one of only two that have been good.
Lingo, the DVD board game, an absolute masterpiece, and very rare, very hard to get your hands on.
And a fantastic episode of your show, might I say.
Yes.
Thank you. We did that.
Oh, yeah, the Vance episode.
Yeah, that was where that came from.
But
the genesis of Vance.
But yes, that game, the reason why that works so well was the whole game was included on that DVD. You know, what it gave us the rules. It, you know, it played itself and it didn't chop out or anything like that. And it actually kept score on the DVD, which just, that blew my mind.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for a DVD game, the DVD worked. Now, moving on to Halo.
Oh, such a letdown.
I mean, that DVD was terrible. We may have just taken that and thrown it out the window. Because, you know, to most DVDs, like in the lingo, it should have made the game easier. But in Halo, it overcomplicated it so much so. And on top of that, it kept glitching out. Like, it's like they made a whole bunch of them and didn't have any quality assurance on it.
Excellent.
Right, so like, you would go through this like labyrinth of menus to try to figure out what you're going to do. You have to pick, all right, here's the weapon that I'm using, and here's the unit that I'm fighting, and here's the unit that I'm playing, and here's the time of day, and here's my blood type, and here's my social security number. You go through all these menus, and then you'd hit the button to resolve the attack, and then once every 7 or 8 attacks, you just see a guy kind of staring into nothing with dead eyes, and then nothing would happen. It would just go back.
That's not an exaggeration either.
And there wasn't as much laughing.
Right. Right. I think there was some silent weeping. Silent is an understatement, I think.
Now, moving, like, you know, I'm more picking on DVDs, but VHS, you know, is normally going to be terrible because, you know, the technology with VHS was, like, I'll take the RoboCop example, is you had to fast forward and then play the scenes. And, you know, on a DVD, that probably would have worked better because there could have been a randomizer. But on a VHS tape, you know, you have to fast forward, and we always overshot it.
Yeah.
We'd always, like, you know, play a little bit clip and be like, oh, crap, now we got to rewind, overshoot the rewind. It just it became a hassle. You know,
it'd be kind of cool if you could work in some sort of penalty if you overshoot it, you know?
well, we had talked. Wouldn't it have been cool, like, at the very end, if there was a message from, like, the ED...
Ed 209.
Right in the RoboCop game, yeah.
Saying you have, like, 30 seconds to comply and rewind this tape.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Or, you know, something like that. but, I mean, VHS, for the most part, is going to be terrible. Now, the only exception, and this is reaching into the future because we haven't released the episode.
It might be by the time this one comes out. All right,
cool. Yeah. So I'm just going to say it. So it was Nightmare. Yep. The Nightmare VHS tape worked. And I believe the only reason why I say it worked was because it had that countdown element to it. It's of true. It counted down in real time from 0 to 60 minutes on the screen. So it became a race against time to complete this game.
Oh, and that's interesting. We actually have a friend whose dad runs at a Gen Con every year. And
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You haven't played it, played it. Once you get down to those last like 7 minutes, like everyone's just yelling at each other, like, roll the dice, go.
You should have seen us. So you were just like, we're hovering over the board, just snatching the dice as fast as we could.
Yeah, crazy. you want to talk about a conversion, okay? We started this game, and we were like the same, like, bored, cynical gamers, and we're like, all right, we're playing this VHS game. This is going to be a drag. And then smash cut to 50 minutes later, we're going to take your turn, roll the dice, we're running out of time.
Get out of my way!
We can't let the tape win!
Right. We didn't want to let that guy on the tape win this game. One of us human players had to defeat him.
My favorite was Roger doing the staring contest with the VHS tape. It's actually part of the game.
Wow. Right. That's we recommended that one. That's one of the few that we've been able to recommend on the show.
Okay. That's good to know. We'll have to check
it out.
So,
spoiler alert if you haven't heard it. And now you don't have to listen to it. Go, you.
Nice.
Right on.
Yeah, what amazes me is, I mean, a game like Nightmare, I guess, when you first said RoboCop, like, I'm like, who thinks of that mechanic? Like, who thinks this isn't going to be super clunky, you know? But, I mean, with a game like Nightmare where it's actually functional, mm-hmm. that, you know, that kind of saves that mechanic and says there is justification for this.
Exactly.
It's, at least it's... in one instance.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm sure there are other VHS games out there that are fun because they knew the limits of the technology. They knew that tapes are linear and that you're not going to get a ton of randomization out of them. And so they used that, and yeah, you're going to get limited plays, but at the same time, limited plays is better than unlimited plays of a terrible game.
Yeah.
DVDs, same thing. You know, you've got a few more things that you can do. You can randomize chapters and you can use the DVD to keep score. The big trap that I see with DVD games a lot when we play these is repeat clips. I have the Deal or No Deal DVD game that we're probably going to do sometime in the future. And the trouble with that is it's a perfectly competent game, but they only have like 2-3 clips of Howie Mandel delivering lines in that. And so every 2 minutes, like, uh-oh, there's the banker. What does he want? Like, and it's just the same thing again and again and again. And we can do better than that. It's possible to have delivered a better product. So, again, DVDs, just like Roll and Move, use them right, it can work, but it's tough to make that work.
Okay. And I think you guys had a third mechanic that you wanted to talk about here?
Yeah, Flip, if you want to take that one.
Basically, the third mechanic that kind of gets under our skin is trivia. Using trivia as a crutch, you see plenty of licensed games out there, you know, like somebody from whatever TV affiliate calls up and tells, hey, let's get a game together. Why don't we do like Friends or WWE or whatever? And automatically they're going to go to trivia with a roll and move element, you know? But, yeah, it's just you see so many of these games that, you know, it's just basically roll and then you get a multiple choice question or you're just quizzed outright. It's something that could be used right. It's something that could be used well. But just basically using just trivia as the main element of the game and that's it. That's just it's a crime, well, basically.
If you're going to do that, it should be Trivial Pursuit, right? I mean, like, that's the point of the game.
Yeah, but like Trivial Pursuit has a really interesting, you know, story. You know, I read up on it a while ago, and it was designed by a couple of guys that did like golf courses from Canada or something like that.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was these two guys that were professional golf course designers, and they just kind of came up with the idea of doing a trivial game, and they put it together and sold it for like ridiculous amounts of money to whoever has it now, Hasbro or whatever. But even as a kid, I didn't like Trivial Pursuit because you always got stuck with geography or something, you know.
For me, it was sports.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about sports. I rocked that game as long as I get partnered with someone who knows anything about sports.
But then they try to reskin it with, you know, like comic books or SNL or, you know, as in Saturday Night Live or, you know, whatever. Yeah. But basically, that's the same thing. We're just taking a license. We're falling back on trivia and going with that. But there are some that have done it right. They've actually taken the trivia element and they've kind of added some things to it to make it better, like Wits and Wagers. I haven't actually played the game. I've read the rules and I know a little bit about it. But basically, in Wits and Wagers, you're wagering on who at the table is going to get this question right. You know, nice. So if it's about bread making in the 1700s, I'm going to be placing my wager on Jared because I know that he's a big fan of. But as far I can't really think of any other trivial game out there that does it well.
Yeah, I hate trivia games.
See, yeah. I'm a huge fan of trivia games. Because, well, but it's because I'm a trivia person.
Yeah.
So, right. Like, when I play Trivial Pursuit, I mean, I'm not trying to brag, but I usually win. I mean, because I'm good at trivia games. So, I mean, I'm kind of a little biased. But that said, like, the first time someone made me play Friends Trivia, I wanted to punch something. Because, you know, I didn't know a lot about Friends. So,
yeah.
That's the tricky thing is when making a game that if you make it about trivia, you have automatically limited your audience for that game.
Yeah.
Yep.
And good game design makes it so that all kinds of different people can play it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with targeting a little bit, but when it's about Twilight and only Twilight, then you've really shrunk your audience down. And how can you be truly successful as a designer when you're only going to appeal to a very, very small group?
Yeah.
But, you know, trivia games done right tend to appeal to larger and broader audiences.
Yeah, but I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the licensed games like that those games are not intended for a general gaming audience, right? I mean, they're intended to be sold to
cash in on the game.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So
piles of money.
Right. Yep.
Easy cash in.
Right. Is it okay if I freak out for a second? Because I want to freak out about that.
Go for it.
All right. Cool. Battlestar Galactica proves that a game based on a popular license does not have to be garbage. That game is the best semi-cooperative game out there, in my opinion. I have played probably 100 sessions by now, and I'm not sick of it. I have fun every time I play it. It's engaging. It's deep. It's got a lot going on. You've got interesting mechanics. You've got table politics. It's got everything. So I bought that game because it was a great licensed game. And then a month later, I see Dexter sitting on the shelf and I got suckered into buying it because I was living in this sort of halo of, oh, licensed games are good now. And this one was made in the last 5 years, so I'll get that. And then, well, you'll have to listen to our show to find out. But it very much frustrates me that really good popular licenses that I like are sitting there without good games attached to them, especially when there are definitely, I can almost guarantee, designers out there who love the license and can deliver a great game. So that's my soapbox rant for the day. Stop making garbage licensed games. Start making good licensed games.
Well, I think probably the thought is, like Battlestar Galactica, you can get away with making a game that's not like a trivia and or roll and move game for that, because Battlestar Galactica has a certain audience, right?
Right.
You know, with Twilight, that has a certain audience, and that audience is not going to play a game where they have to do real stuff, right? So I think that, you know, that it is possible to have that good game. It's just, it's got to be the right thing that it's based on.
Yeah, the audience that's already keyed into Battlestar Galactica is the same audience that's likely to be keyed into good games in general.
Right. This is true.
Yeah.
This is true. But certainly, I'm really hoping that Martin Wallace's Doctor Who game delivers.
Yeah.
Because my understanding, I haven't played a lot of the Doctor Who games out there, but I understand that most of them are in the former category, the sort of retail cash-in kind of thing, with the exception of some fan-made projects out there and that kind of thing. So I have high hopes. I have mine on pre-order, and I'm hoping that it is not a show game, that it's just a fun game. I feel better now. Thanks for letting me vent a little bit.
You know what's interesting? I just thought Jeopardy is totally a trivia game, but that's definitely stood the test of time. And a lot of people like Jeopardy. I like Jeopardy.
I don't.
I don't know if it's just
dissenting opinions.
I don't know if it's just a simple thing of you didn't phrase that in the form of a question. You're out of here. But
isn't that a weird thing that you can get the answer completely right, but because you didn't put the right word in front of it?
Yeah, I know.
You know, they used to be really hardcore about it. Way back in the Art Fleming days, you actually had to have the right grammar. So if you said, what is Abraham Lincoln and not who is Abraham Lincoln, you'd be wrong. You'd be ruled against. So they've loosened up on that. They don't do that anymore. But yeah, I mean, well, you look at Jeopardy. That's a great example of trivia done right, because it has more than just the trivia as an element. You've got risk versus reward with betting on your questions. You've got the strategy of knowing that daily doubles are usually hidden in the harder categories. So do I chase the daily double and try to get out of the way? Do I avoid it because it's in a category that I don't like? So there's more than just answering questions going on. So maybe that's the answer with some of these mechanics that don't work as well, is to make it not the only thing going on, to blend it into other things that make the game work well.
Are they still doing those like video interjections on some of the questions?
Oh yeah, the Clue Crew.
I hate those guys. that's almost like combining Jeopardy with a VHS game.
Wow. Trebek's like, fast forward, pause.
Oh my god, that would be the worst VHS game ever, where you had to fast forward to the question end category for you would have one game on one tape. No, you'd have regular Jeopardy on one tape, Double Jeopardy on the second tape, and maybe a Final Jeopardy on a third tape.
What was the name of the computer that went on that show? Was it Deep
Watson.
Blue? Watson. That's
Watson
right.
Was the computer.
Oh. Yeah. I wonder if Watson could comprehend the videos.
Watson edition.
I was very lucky to score a Ken Jennings and Brad Rutter versus Watson poster, which is pretty awesome. That's we have to put that back up. It's been hiding for a couple of apartments now, but that's got to get back on the wall.
So I have a challenge then, because the next segment in our show is practicing the pitch. So here's a challenge. Can we come up with a game here that features all these mechanics, that is a roll and move game, that features trivia, that uses a VHS tape or a DVD, and is a licensed game? Can we come up with that game here that we think would be good to play, that would be fun, that real gamers like ourselves would actually be engaged with?
We have Jeopardy theme music while we play.
only if we have a version that's 7 hours long.
Yeah.
We need some time on this one.
I mean, I think when you say all those things, the first thing that comes to my head, Short Circuit.
Short Circuit.
Johnny Five is alive.
Okay, so
wait, what?
All right, I haven't watched that movie in a long time, but let's run with it.
We're not saying we have to do Short Circuit.
Hey, it's on the table. Let's go.
Hey, we can always come back to RoboCop. I mean,
you know, there's one license that I think they've always could have did more with is Gremlins.
Gremlins.
I agree with that.
Gremlins might be better, because I think we could actually make a decent game out of Gremlins.
Yeah, I remember when Gremlins 2 came out, I was so excited, and then I saw it, man. And I was just like, I was so let down. I was expecting like this huge, like, I don't know. I'm going to have to go watch it again. Thanks, guys.
All right, so Gremlins, the game, and it has to have a tape in it, and it has to have trivia, and it has to have rolling.
Well, it could have a DVD, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I got it. Back to the Future.
At my house, I actually have the Back to the Future card game, which I have not played yet, but
it's good.
The new one?
That's the Looney Labs one, right?
Yeah, it's the new one. It looks good, so yeah. I'm hoping it doesn't suck.
So anyway, go on.
I need another minute, but I think I got a perfect one.
Okay.
So it would have to be, it would be an X-Men game, but based around the villain Arcade.
Oh man!
Okay. So
he's one of our most hated villains.
Yeah, no, he's a terrible villain. But what it would be is you got the roll and move, which is going through his arcade labyrinth, going from danger room to danger room, and then because he's Arcade and you know he's all about question based, it would be a trivia game that would, and then you'd have to solve questions of some sort on cards or something like that.
Maybe like almost logic puzzles or something like that, yes.
Or some sort of, you know, it could even be like Cranium logic style. The VHS DVD element, we take the time element and have Arcade making fun of you the whole time for like 60 minutes.
Oh, man.
And you have to win within 60 minutes, and it's X-Men, so it's a Marvel licensed game. Bance.
Then a few years later, DC could put out a Batman Riddler version, and there could be a lawsuit.
Man.
Scratch the X in one. We're going back to the Riddler.
Yeah, it's better.
Batman Riddler one.
So you have the Riddler making fun of you for an hour, and maybe throwing occasional like random challenges.
Actually,
and it's a DVD, so you can do that at random and mix it up a little.
What might be better for the Batman, in my opinion, would be, since he's got the whole rogues gallery, right? Like, for each different section, like, boom, trivia question. Boom, Riddler pops up, asks you a question. And then, like, whenever you're not, then the Joker is just, like, making fun of you. Because it would be funny if it was the Joker, right?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Because he's, you know, crazy.
So you're like, I'm Mark Hamill, and I don't like you.
Then you could make up one Batman villain that only exists on the VHS tape, like VHS Man or something like that.
Rewinder.
Calendar Man.
I am Betamax.
Betamax Man.
Bruce Wayne will pay his late fees if it's the last thing I do.
Betamax, it's time for you to rewind.
Batman, you better remember to be kind and rewind.
We got Batman doing Bale voice the whole time. Where's the pause button? Where's the pause button?
Seriously. You could have everyone loves to play at least one of the Batman people. It doesn't even have to be Batman. Like, you could play as Nightwing. You could play as Batgirl or Batboy.
Or even Catwoman or something like that.
You could play as Alfred.
I was just going to say, can I play as Alfred?
And they could all have different powers. So it's not like you're just getting stuck with some random character. Like, there might be an element of choosing the right person.
So, like, yeah, you could use Alfred in case you needed to serve someone tea or something. What?
Yeah,
or shotgun someone. I don't know.
Well, or Alfred could be maybe like some sort of helping element. Like, you have Alfred tokens that you can spend to get resources, perhaps. So, so if you're rolling moving to one part of the game where you need to maybe solve a puzzle or do something else, you could spend an Alfred token for an advantage or a weapon or something like that.
Now, here's a thought for an alternate play style here. What if it could be a competitive game where one person is playing as the Riddler and you're playing tiles down to build the labyrinth as the person advances?
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe it's sort of a race where you need to build the labyrinth for the person to get one to one thing to the other, Batman to get to the bomb or whatever.
Yeah.
But he can only advance through roll and move. So you have some uncertainty as to how far he's going to get. So so you're trying to build the shortest path because you know that every twist that you put in there is going to be a longer path. And you have some tension there as the clock is ticking down to figure out if he's going to make it to the end and disarm the bomb and save the city.
And if you don't, on the VHS tape, there's this big explosion. That standard stocks effect. Yeah.
So what I'm thinking here is you're playing tiles, right? And Batman, and sometimes your tile will be a crossroads where the path branches. And if Batman, and you keep building that path, but if Batman turns down a path that you haven't built yet, then Batman gets to play the tile. He gets to choose his own direction to get toward the goal. And so you want to try and wind him around and redirect him, while Batman is rolling and moving, trying to get ahead of you so he can make his own path.
That makes
legitimate
sense.
Though.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds like a real game, man.
That's the point, right?
I think you failed.
No, that's what we're doing here. We're trying to legitimize
it. We're making a terrible game?
Oh, no.
In that case.
Wait, I thought you guys knew based on your suggestions.
I'm sorry. We'll make Trump the VHS game.
Oh, not again.
You said problem we'd never solved. Speak of that game again.
Oh, boy. No. I think that's actually kind of a fun idea. If you're listening, DC, you're welcome.
Yeah, that was free.
Yeah, you've had a rough time lately, you know? Your movies haven't been holding up to the Marvel ones, so,
you know. So now you have your VHS or DVD Batman versus the Riddler game with tile placement, roll and move, and logic puzzles. So there you go.
There you go.
Perfect sense.
So if we do put this out, it is on VHS, which means there's going to be a resurgence in VCR sales.
It has to come with a VCR.
Oh. Yeah, it would have to, you're right.
We're bringing it back.
Do they even sell VCRs in stores anymore?
These will be custom Batman VCRs with, like, Batmobile on them or whatever, and they, like, have, like, LEDs.
They're top loaders.
And it comes with a pack-in game of Batarang lawn darts or something.
Well, see, the thing is that they do still make VHS players, VCRs, but they're all USB now. So you can watch them on your computer.
Or
you could theoretically upload to your computer, right? Yeah.
My dad has one of those.
That's okay. I still have my old tube TV that has a VHS and FM radio in it. We bust out from time to time.
Nice. Well, hey, moving on. We're getting a little low on our time here. I think we might as well move on to the last section of the show, which is our plugs. And apart from plugging one of the most fantastic podcasts of all time, which is Flip the Table, what else do you guys have to plug tonight?
Okay, well, I'll start. We'll throw a plug out there for the Dice Tower Network. That's dicetowernetwork.com. If you like Flip the Table, there's a ton of other great gaming podcasts out there to listen to. So definitely that's one to check out. Jared, you got anything?
Actually, I do. If you're a video game fan like myself, there's a really good comedy site called dorkly.com. That's www.dorkly.com. Has a lot of video game, just comedy. It is adult. Very, very mature. So kids, do not go there without your parents' permission.
Okay.
All right, Flip, what you got?
Well, if there's one website that is on my daily routine of hitting before I go to work, is nerdapprove.com. Basically, it's part of a sister site of Fashionably Geek and Nerdalicious, which talks about nerd. Nerdalicious talks about nerd based type of foods, like people that bake a Star Trek cake or something like that, you know. But yeah, Nerd Approved definitely is a nice one-stop place to check out all your basic geek stuff to kind of charge your batteries a little bit.
Yeah, right. Okay, so that's a good plug.
Oh yeah,
I think that works well.
Yeah,
so is that everybody's plugs? Is everybody good?
All good.
Okay, I think that leaves one matter of business to attend to, and that is the Battle of Wits.
No way, man. Oh, crap. I'm scared.
I'm super excited, actually, because every time I listen to you guys' podcast, the Battle of Wits is like the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, the Battle of Wits is something we feature on every Flip the Table. It's at the end of the show. It's a way that we can end on a positive note and have a little bit of fun after we've just played a terrible game. and this will be a landmark Battle of Wits. Not only is it the first ever podcast versus podcast Battle of Wits, it is also the first ever two-on-two Battle of Wits. So this will be Team Flip the Table, Jared and Flip, versus Team Building the Game, Rob and Jason.
All right. You're going down, clown.
I will find you.
Have you seen it? Do you know what you're dealing with?
Yeah, we got a network, buddy, okay?
Have you ever seen Ronald McDonald parked outside your house for hours?
Uh-oh. I'll know Flip's at him. Right.
So since... on the Battle of Wits, what we often do is we talk about something loosely related to the game that we played for the day. Since we've been talking about terrible game mechanics this whole show, today's Battle of Wits is going to be about weird and terrible games themselves. And this is based on a recent blog post on MTV Geek. This was Matt Morgan who writes for that site. He wrote the top 10 strangest celebrity board games.
Oh, gosh.
So today's game is about the top 10 strangest celebrity board games, which is like a Christmas list for our show.
I can only imagine.
So this is going to be played similar to the rating game that we play on the show. What I'm going to do is I'm going to read the description of one of the top 10 weirdest celebrity games. And the first team is going to tell me what they believe the BGG rating for that game is. Okay. So I've looked these all up on Board Game Geek. You're going to tell me the BGG rating. And the other team is going to tell me if they believe the rating is higher or lower than that rating. Okay?
Okay.
The other team, if they guess incorrectly, they will give the current player a point. If they guess correctly, they will get a point for themselves. And if you get the BGG rating exactly on the nose to the hundredth of a point, I will give you a cool 5-point bonus. We're going to do this in three rounds. First round is worth 1 point apiece. Second round is worth 2. Third round is worth 3. We'll do 6 questions and a tiebreaker at the end if we need to. All right, gentlemen, are you ready to play the Battle of Wits?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
You flip the table. Are you ready for the Battle of Wits?
Yeah.
Then here we go. Here comes that awesome music.
So loud.
All right, team building the game, I'll give you the option. Would you like to go first or second in this battle?
Let's go first.
Yeah.
You're going to go first. You're going to take the bull by the horns.
Yeah.
Okay, so our first game on MTV Geek's list of the weirdest games is Mr. T, the card game. For 2 to 4 players ages 5 and up, this was number 9 on MTV's list. Released in 1983, it's based on the Mr. T animated series. and is a trick-taking game featuring Mr. T and his gymnast friends. You need to give me the BGG rating, and for these ratings, BGG goes up to the hundredths of the percent, so it's something point something something if you're giving the rating. I will give a hint to both teams right now that there are a couple on this list that are even numbers and don't have anything special after the decimal. So that's your one and only hint for the whole game. So team building the game, Mr. T the card game, what do you believe the BGG rating as of like a million years ago by the time this airs?
Well, I pity the fool who gets this wrong.
Oh!
Because somebody had to go for that joke, right?
you did it well, sir.
What do you think?
I'm thinking of a number, and you say your number, and then we'll take the middle.
Okay.
I'm going to give it a 3.1.
A 3.1. I was thinking more like a 4.3.
So... I'm not that good with math.
So 2.2.
What? That doesn't make that sense. In the middle. In the middle.
In the middle.
Talking out loud. We know their strategy now.
3.7.
We'll say 3.7.
I doubt that's actually in the middle.
Everybody at home has done the math. It's like, you're wrong. You're off by...
Actually.
So building the game's guess is 3.7. Team Flip the Table, do you believe it is higher or lower than 3.7?
I pity the fool that rates my game in that range. We say it's higher.
Jared, do you agree? Higher?
Yeah. Much higher, Clever Lang.
So building the game's guess is 3.7. Team Flip the Table says it is higher. The actual BGG rating is 7.0.
Yeah. Wow.
We're peeling out in the 18 band right now.
Love when a plan comes together.
Hilarious.
Oh, man. All right. Okay.
Nice work,
guys. All
right,
next one's for Team Flip the Table. You're getting the Bruce Jenner decathlon game.
Oh, what?
We actually have a copy of this coming from another podcaster.
Oh, it's that one.
Is this yes. one with the guy on the cover looks like he's going to pass out?
Sure. Let's go with that.
Bruce Jenner. Oh, love that guy.
This is from 1979, number 8 on MTV's list. 3 to 4 players, ages 8 and up. Players compete with a board game version of the decathlon where they play cards, roll dice, and snap a plastic disc with a rubber band in their quest for victory. Bruce Jenner decathlon game. 18 ratings on BGG. What do you think the score is right now?
I think it's a perfect 10.
I'm going to concur with my fellow
You're
going to
say it's 10.
It's a 10.
You're going to...
Oh, wait, you didn't phrase that as a question. What is a 10, Alex?
I think I should point out that Jared doesn't have the best record on the Battle of Wits.
Don't listen to me, but it's probably higher.
Robin Jason... The guess is 10. Do you believe it's higher or lower than a 10?
I think it should be a 10 out of 10, but I think we're going to have to go lower.
Yeah.
You're going to go lower? Okay. Bold move. Right. Bruce Jenner decathlon game. For one big point to win big, the actual rating, 4.89.
What?
Shocker.
Oh, it's rigged.
Evens up the score. 1-1 now.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody's game. Whew.
It is anybody's game. We're going into round two. We're going to double the points. 2 points a question. Still 5 points if you can nail it exactly right. Flip the table. You'll go first this round.
Okay.
Okay. And you have the Backstreet Boys Around the World.
Yeah.
The Backstreet Boys Around the World from the year 2000. 2 to 4 players, ages 8 and up. This is tied for number 5 and 6 on MTV's list with another game. And is a sort of version of the game Cranium, but about a very specific subject, and that is the Backstreet Boys. So you roll dice, and you might have to sing a piece of a Backstreet Boys song or answer a trivia question about the Backstreet Boys, etc.
I'd own that.
With the ultimate goal being victory. There are 3 ratings on BGG. What do you believe the Backstreet Boys Around the World is rated right now,
man,
for 2 points?
This is rough. Okay. I'm going to go... 4.3.
You say 4.3. Jared, do you concur?
I think it's the perfect 10.
Okay, so we're gonna add those. We're gonna add those together. It's gonna be,
we're gonna add them together. 14. Divide 3, by 5.
So it's gonna be,
you sure don't want to divide by 0.
14.3 divided by 2 is 7.15. That's our answer.
You're gonna go with 7.
Yeah,
0.15.
We're using your strategy, guys.
Hey, could be ironic, right?
Yeah.
Well, the only thing I know is that Backstreet's back. All right.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
Team building the game, what do you say?
I think I got to lower.
I think we're probably going to go lower.
Yeah, I'd like it that way.
That is your quoting Backstreet lyrics.
We might be surprised, okay, but we're going to go with lower, yeah.
You go with lower, okay. Based on 3 ratings on BGG.
Oh, no, that's not good.
Team Flip the Table's guest is 7.15. The actual rating, 4.5.
Yeah! Oh, yeah!
Rob and Jason, this next one's for you. The name of the game, NSYNC Backstage Pass.
Whoa.
NSYNC Backstage Pass. This is from the year 2000. 2 to 4 players, ages 8 and up. It is tied for number 5 and 6 on MTV's list.
I think NSYNC is probably a little bit better than Backstreet Boys because, you know, Justin Timberlake came out of that.
Well, the problem is that I can't quote any NSYNC lyrics, so I can't make any jokes now.
I can. Bye, 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 bye. That's all I know.
Okay.
Which is what's going to happen after this. So, no.
So this one's a spin and move trivia game where you answer multiple choice questions which reveal secret personal details about the members of NSYNC.
Ooh.
2 ratings on Board Game Geek.
2 ratings.
So basically the ratings are completely inconsequential because there are only 2 of them.
If you want to win this game, they're consequential.
All right, I think we need to go for the ironic approach here. That I think if those 2 people rated this game, I think they were doing it to be funny. So I'm gonna say this is pretty high. I'm going to say 9.0.
I think that's too high.
You think it's too
high? I think 7.0. 7.2.
Because he hinted at earlier that there's a couple on here that have a 0.0.
How about solid 8?
Solid 8?
Yeah.
All
meet
right, in the middle? I will meet in the middle with 8.
All right.
You're going 8.0?
8.0. Okay.
8.0. Team Flip the Table, what do you say? Higher or lower?
We're going lower.
Okay, you think it's lower than 8.0?
Yeah. Play it safe, whatever.
Well, Backstreet is obviously the superior band, but, you know, NSYNC, I mean, where are they, really?
Yes, where are they?
I have no idea.
They're in our house now! Surprise!
Double surprise!
Team Building the Game says 8.0. Team Flip the Table says it's lower. The actual BGG rating based on 2 ratings, 3.25. Oh, yeah. Flip the Table ties it up. It is 3-3.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Team Building the Game, you're up.
Okay.
Your title. The Vanilla Ice Electronic Rap Game.
Oh.
The Vanilla Ice Electronic...
Say no more. 10.
I have a couple more clues for you.
Okay, fair enough.
These questions are a little bit harder, so it's 3 points for each question. Still in anybody's game. This is from 1991. It was number 4 on MTV's list. And in this game, you construct a rap by playing word cards to the board, then perform your masterpiece with the electronic beatbox microphone.
Oh, I had an idea for a game like that.
Gotta get this game.
Some of the rhyming words included in the box are chump, jump, grump, and lump.
Grump?
No Trump, unfortunately.
We could rap about Lumpy from Heartthrob.
It has 1 rating on BGG. 1 single rating.
And that was Vanilla Ice himself.
What do you think the lone rating on BGG is for a Vanilla Ice, the electronic rap game? Wow. Team Building the Game.
Yeah, 10.
I think that's probably...
It's 10.
We're going to go with 10, and we're going to add Go Ninja, Go Ninja, Go.
Okay.
So you Ninja Turtle.
You believe it is a perfect 10. This strategy has worked so well for you in the past.
Well, technically, it works so well for the other team.
I think I have that soundtrack at home. I think I'm going to go home and check that out.
That was the best crossover appearance ever.
Oh,
Building
yeah,
the game,
yeah, yeah.
Flip the Table has nothing on Vanilla Ice and the Ninja Turtles, okay?
I will agree with
Can't
that.
Compete.
We bow. Team Flip the Table, higher or lower than a 10?
I think they're exact.
Yeah, we're going to join hands with our podcasting brother.
So, okay.
Flat 10.
So this creates an interesting situation, okay?
It's 10.
Because... if Team Building the Game is wrong, nobody gets points this round.
Right.
And the next question will decide the game. Vanilla Ice, electronic rap game, the actual rating, 2.0. Oh. Sad faces
so
everywhere. Mighty Casey has struck out. All right, so we still have a tie game. The score is now 3-3. This one is for all the marbles. And this one starts with Team Flip the Table.
All the pogs.
Yeah.
Your title, is Rodney Dangerfield's No Respect. Rodney Dangerfield's No Respect. Number three on MTV's list. This one's from 1985. It is for 2 to 4 players, ages 8 and up, because 8-year-olds love Rodney Dangerfield. And it is a number stacking game, not unlike Lost Cities in its gameplay. However, it does include a screw your neighbor player elimination element, because we all love player elimination. And as shockingly as this may sound, it has nothing to do with jokes or comedy or Rodney Dangerfield or anything. It's basically Rodney Dangerfield's picture on this number stacking sort of screw your neighbor game. 14 ratings on BGG.
Yeah, 14 people have played this game.
14 wow. people have played this game. What do you believe, Team Flip the Table, the rating is?
Technically, it would be 13 plus Rodney Dangerfield.
Maybe Vanilla Ice, too.
4.8. I'm just throwing it out there.
You're going to say 4.8.
What say you, Jared?
I think it's the worst game ever made. I think it's a zero.
So we're going to combine 0 and 4.8 and divide it by 2, and we're going to come up with 4.8.
Okay.
That sounds math.
Yeah, now who's doing bad math?
hey, kids don't listen to this for math, okay?
4.8, okay. So that's Team Put the Table's guess. Team Building the Game. This is for the game. Do you believe it's higher or lower?
So statistically speaking, it's more likely to be higher. But reason says
tension mounting.
It's probably lower.
Serious. I think I want to go higher.
All right, we'll go higher because the math supports that.
Yeah, we're gonna go higher.
You're gonna go higher.
Logic, maybe not, but math is on our side.
Okay, so if you're right, you win the game. If not, Team Flip the Table takes it home. The actual rating for Rodney Dangerfield's No Respect is 4.76. Team Flip the Table finishes with 6 points.
That makes two official wins for me.
Respectable performance from Rob and Jason from Team Building the Game. Thank you so much for playing.
Oh, thank you.
That was super duper fun.
That was great. Yeah, wow. Well, yeah, thank you, Chris, very much for setting that up for us. And Flip and Jared, thank you for playing with us.
Oh, thank you, guys.
It was a blast.
Absolutely. We should do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, we should do this every week. Well, not every week, but...
Every week, Chris, if you could write a Battle of Wits for our podcast, that would be awesome.
Great. I'll tell you Battle of Wits the VHS game with a roll and move mechanic.
Love it.
Perfect. And it's a license that you own already, so it's all good.
Yeah, that's right. Technically. So I don't have to worry about getting the rights to Flip's likeness.
Just use Ronald McDonald.
Cool. Well, hey, I think that's going to wrap us up for tonight. To our listeners, thank you so much for joining us. We really, really appreciate it. You can check us out at our website, which is buildingthegamepodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. My Twitter is at poorly_designed. Jason is at J.A. Slingerland. You can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. Did I forget any of our stuff?
No, that's all of our stuff.
Okay, and then Flip the Table, if you gentlemen could plug yourselves for us one more time.
The website is tableflipsyou.com. That's TableFlipsYou.
Right on. Yeah, thank you again, guys. And seriously, to all of our listeners, if you haven't listened to Flip the Table yet, it is really a fantastic show. It's one of our favorites. We're so thrilled that you guys could hang out with us tonight and do the show with us. Thank you a million times over. We definitely want to do this again sometime.
Absolutely. Thank you a million.
Yeah, it was a blast. Absolutely.
It was more fun than most of the games we play on the show. So that's a good thing.
All right. Good night, everybody. Awesome. Thanks again.
Goodbye. See you later.
Out.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
So we are...
Have you... thank you. Have you tried that Ichabod yet?
Yeah, I like it a lot.
Say, if not, definitely take some because it's awesome.
It's I like how it has a mild pumpkin to it.
Yeah, no, it's not compared to other pumpkin ales. It's not like you have to wait for it. Yeah. It's not like whoa, pumpkin.
Woo, pumpkin. Ow, I love pumpkin. Punk.
It's my new song. You like that song?
I do.
Yeah, it's good. I'm proud of that song. I worked real hard on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty terrible, actually.
Okay, it's beer time.
Turn back over.
Oh, I'll try a Neapolitan stout. Do you not have that before?
Ooh, that's good, too.
It's good stuff. You know what?
It's very creamy.
I made Will walk all the way upstairs to get
it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, whatever.
I wasn't even thinking about it.
It's cool. You dude's got koozies now, too.
Yeah,
it's full service here.
I love koozies. Full service here at Flipworks Media.